Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, here to host the show together with Kay Patak. Hello, Kay.
And thank you all for tuning in to Local Talk.
KHOI is 3 years old, so we're going to be celebrating on the 23rd of August. You are invited. Join us on that day.
It should be a great celebration. Bar La Tosca will be hosting a public KHOI birthday party. If you are listening to KHOI, you are invited. And bring a friend. There will be live music as well by the band Caldure. Bar La Tosca is located at the intersection of Clark and Main Street on the west side of Tom Evans Park. The party will be from 4:30 to 6:30.
The party will be a reception of sorts as well, since we're having a distinguished guest coming from Iowa City in honor of KHOI's anniversary. Iowa's own former FCC commissioner and free speech crusader, Nicholas Johnson, will be coming to Ames earlier that day to speak in honor of KHOI. He'll be speaking at 3:30 on the origins and future of radio at the First Methodist Church. Again, that's Sunday, August 23rd, with a reception and party afterwards at Bar La Tosca from 4:30 to 6:30. You're invited, and both events are free of charge. We do appreciate donations, though, especially in honor of our anniversary. During the weekend, I visited some of the little free libraries around town. I'm sure you've seen them. They're very cute. It's a small, sturdy, waterproof structure, which is set up outside near the street, usually, and it's filled with books, and residents are free to take or give the books. We wanted to see what is currently available. So at the corner of Highland and Ross Road, there was a book by Fern Kupfer, Before and After Zechariah. Our own Fern Kupfer, Before and After Zechariah. That wasn't the only thing there. I'm just giving highlights here. At 807 Carroll, I found a hard copy of The Cat in the Hat, the little free library at ACPC at the corner of 9th and Carroll, has a two-tiered library with books for adults on top and books for children below. And in the top part were several books on marriage. There was a book on marriage counseling. I think one book was called At the Beginning of Forever, which is kind of a scary title for a book. And in the children's part, there was a particularly beautiful book called On the Trail of Sacagawea, the chronicle and paintings, photographs, and writings of a family's trip retracing the journey of Sacagawea, who was the Native American woman who guided the Lewis and Clark expedition.
And according to some stories, saved it many times.
In Eastwood at 440 East 7th Street, there were stories for teenagers with titles like Mummy in the Morning. The little library in front of the Tribune on 5th Street has a lot of romance novels, including one called I Never Loved Your Mind. Most notable, though, is a copy of Italo Calvino's The Non-Existent Night and The Cloven Viscount. So that's a find. Also, a collection of magazines about herbs, very, very informative. Along the way, I ran into the owners of two of the little libraries. Here's what they had to say.
We have well over a dozen and a half young boys in our neighborhood from ages like 2 to 12. Mm-hmm. And so it's a high traffic area, and we're only a few blocks from the school.
Do the children in the neighborhood use the books?
Oh, definitely use the books. Yes, they come and go.
Do people leave books too?
Yes. Yes, you can leave any type of book. Mm-hmm. I have the discretion whether or not to leave it in the little library. There were a lot of baby, toddler books. Mm-hmm. And I thought, being this summer time, children have more time on their hands, and recognizing the number of older children we have in this neighborhood, probably the chapter books would interest them. Chapter books are literally book with chapters. It involves a story, more involved. It's a story.
It's for older people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is in your library today?
Thomas, the Tank Engine. That's shapes and sizes and coming and going and colors.
Those are for young children.
True. Mm-hmm. And then I have a Destination of Trust. Life is easy, truth is hard. What will Brad choose? Maniac McGee. Overwhelming Odds, an inspirational story about a young man who dealt with burns on his body. Mm-hmm. Perilous Road. Western, mm-hmm. Never Talk to Strangers.
So those are for younger.
Right.
Never Talk to Strangers.
Right. A variety. Just a variety of good books.
Thank you so much for taking time to talk.
Well, I just appreciate when I look out my picture window and I see a little red wagon pull up, and there they are, checking it out, and then they ride away or on their bicycles, and they got books in their hands.
Is it kind of like a bird feeder?
Yes. Yeah. That's good analogy.
Why did you want to do it?
I believe in reading.
I'm Julie Charlson.
I'm Craig Charlson.
And this is 809 Carol.
Yep.
Raising Readers gave us the box and the post, and I modified it.
Made it look like our house. We've seen a lot of people driving by and stopping and leaving books in it, which is really nice. Right now, there's a lot of Daniel Steele books in there. There's a guy that goes around and loads the libraries with those. Yeah. Yeah, we had somebody stop by last night. They pulled up here, and she came out with an armful of books, and it was kids' books that she put in there.
Do you monitor at all what's in there?
Yeah, we do.
We add more children's books.
It's hard to keep enough kids' books in there.
Mostly kids is who we see use it, and I think that's a good thing.
You're listening to Local Talk, where I explore people's stories and events of Central Iowa. Thank you for tuning in. I'm one of your hosts, Kay Puttock. The Little Free Libraries are a project of Raising Readers, which we'll be hearing more about right now. KHOI reporter Ben Beloit brings us this report.
We all know literacy is important, but we may not realize how much so. A little research into the known advantages of a successful childhood education and the disadvantages of not having one yields many eye-opening facts. For example, the state of California was cognizant enough of the relationship between illiteracy and crime that they once based the number of new prison cells they would have to build on the number of fourth graders who were unable to read at grade level at the time. On the flip side, a more literate populace has underappreciated benefits as well. Educated citizens can ask our leaders informed and critical questions, and are more likely to notice when the questions don't get answered, or when those answers are inconsistent. They're also a boon to the economy, since one of the most critical questions a business must consider when deciding whether to open a new facility in a given area is whether or not that area contains enough laborers with the necessary skills and education to fill the business's needs. So what are we doing in Ames to keep our kids out of future jails and get them into futuristic jobs? For the answers, I started with Diane Schmidt, an experienced veteran in the fight against youth illiteracy.
I'm a part of something called Raising Readers in Story County. It's a nonprofit, and we have two major goals. One is to make sure that students are ready when they enter kindergarten to be successful in school. The second is to help any kind of readers that might need a little extra boost in their skills, kindergarten through third grade. And so I'm involved in the Raising Readers, and there are several components to that. I'm also a part of what's called Ames Reads, which is a collaborative partnership between a lot of different components, different advocates in the city that work together to look at school attendance, at reading at third grade proficiency level, and looking at summer learning loss, because we want to make sure that kids are keeping their skills up over the summer. So those are two partner organizations that work together, and I'm involved in both.
You mentioned third grade learning proficiency. That's a borderline where you've said, by now we want to make sure kids know at least this much.
Right. Up until third grade, they're learning to read, and once they get to third grade or fourth grade, then they're reading to learn. And there's a big push even in our state legislature and Iowa legislature that by the year 2017, if students aren't reading proficiently by the end of third grade, there's a possibility they could be retained. But then there are a lot of safeguards to work on before that, like getting a lot of extra help for the kids when they've been identified. But that is a pivotal year because people plan prisons, the number of prisons beds that will be needed in future years according to how many kids are not successful in third grade. And third grade non-proficiency is a predictor of high school dropout, too.
I can see how it certainly would be a gap there, because by that third grade point, if the teachers are generally assuming that they can use the text to teach the children, they're not going to be teaching the children about the text anymore.
Right, and things have kind of changed in schools. Right now in the AIMS system, students are benchmarked, and what that means is they're given a reading test, and then it predicts what reading level they're at. So it's not just reading at third grade. It could be starting in kindergarten, there's a level A book, and then it goes A, B, C, all the way up to Z by the end of sixth grade or so. So it's a way to pinpoint where a child really is, and then you give them leveled books that meet their particular reading level, and it's less frustrating for kids. So it is set up a little differently than the traditional kinds. It's what the trend is across the nation, actually. More and more reading research has been done, and so things have they've really honed in on what really works with kids.
You've been educating for some 30-plus years
right
now between your work and your volunteerism.
Well, probably more like 40 if you count that.
So in that time, how much would you say the problem of youth illiteracy has grown?
Well, our culture has changed so much, so we have more kids with special needs, and especially we have families with low income, and sometimes those families don't really have the means to provide the enrichment and the background and reinforcement for kids that maybe other families have. So it seems like there's more of a gap there. There's really an achievement gap, and there's like a digital gap because some kids have technology at home and others don't. So over a period of time, you can see this cumulative effect. And by the time a child is in eighth grade or so, there could be a big gap in achievement levels.
You had told me before that one of the predictors of a difficulty in reading is a lack of resources. And, for example, when a child is signed up for the reduced or free lunch program,
right?
That's usually an indicator that that child is going to have difficulty. Can you explain more from your own experience? What's the connection between a lack of resources and a challenge in education?
Well, when students don't have resources at home, then they aren't able to have as many enriching experiences that other kids might have. And so it just kind of adds to that imbalance. I don't know that I can exactly say what the connection is, except resources do make a difference. And that's one of the things that we're trying to do with Raising Readers is provide students with resources, books at home, tutoring, so if they need extra one-to-one help, and parent education. We're really looking at the engagement of the parents, because if you can empower the parents and help them realize how important school is for kids, it can make a huge difference.
And you're needing to branch out the programs to aim at several different targets, really, because you also have, in addition to children who may simply have a lack of resources or a lack of opportunity to have learned thus far, you also have children with learning disabilities.
Right.
And you also have children who may simply be learning English as their second language.
That's exactly right.
And that obviously is a significant challenge, even if no other challenges are present.
That's true. They say it takes about 7 years for a child that's learning English to really be able to handle the content area. You might have, that child could be speaking fluently in a much shorter time, but to actually be able to read and comprehend and so on, it can take some kids up to 7 years.
So between these various goals and all the children in Ames that you're trying to help learn, how many volunteers would you estimate there are working on these goals right now?
Well, we've trained about 100 community volunteers for tutoring, and we have, I would say, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 80 volunteers that help with the various projects that we do.
If someone who's listening to this right now would like to volunteer to teach children to read, what should they do?
They could go to the Raising Readers website, and it's www.raising-readers.org, and there is a place to volunteer. So there's a sign up on the website, and I would be very happy to talk to anyone, too, if they have questions and want to get more information, so they could contact me through my email.
How about maybe there's someone who doesn't have a lot of time but would like to give a financial contribution?
Oh, that would be wonderful, because we have a lot of projects we want to do, and the way we are funded, since we're nonprofit, is by contributions. We have some businesses that help sponsor books that we give to the kids from Mary Greeley, from McFarland, when children go in for their well child checkups. So those books are all provided usually by businesses. We have individual contributors, and then our next source of funding is by writing grants. Grants can be really competitive, though, so you don't always get them.
Mm. From what I've heard, you have managed to expand the volunteer programs in Ames recently by quite a bit.
Yes, that's true. And I think when people see what our mission is, there are people in the community that want to give. Like last summer, I was looking for tutoring sites for students. We ended up tutoring in 10 different sites, but I had churches and businesses, different people that really were bending over backwards so we could tutor in their facilities so it would be safe and a good location for kids to come to. So the community can give back in many in-kind ways, too.
A casual observer might not realize that in order to function, these programs don't just need volunteer teachers. Sometimes a driver is needed to get a child to the library and back because their parents have to work or don't have an extra car. Situations vary, but sometimes several links in a human chain all have to work reliably so that a child can get there and back again. Of course, many parents are keeping a close eye on their children's progress. I spoke with a mother and daughter to see how the program went for them.
Thank you very much for coming in.
No problem.
I am Ben Beloit. Jenny Evans?
Yes.
And I have not been introduced.
This is my daughter, Emma Evans.
Hello, Emma Evans.
Hi.
We wanted to talk today about the reading program that you were in. How long have you been in that now?
The Raising Readers, she was in last summer, for one summer.
How did you like it?
Well, we read a lot and read books that are funny and fun to learn, and we do road shorts that's good, that's how that will make me a better
reader.
Mm-hmm. Made you a better reader? Did you like it?
Yeah.
It was fun?
Mm-hmm. Lots of fun.
What did you like most about it?
That we read books and we did water a lot of times.
Like they did a lot of word searches.
Oh, yeah. Reading books.
And they read a lot of books, and you had a stuffed animal that you brought home.
Uh-huh.
And you read to the stuffed animal.
Yeah, I did. Well, yeah.
Do you feel like you learned mm-hmm. a lot about reading in that?
Yeah, I'm doing battle.
Yeah?
Yeah. Not battle.
Were you going to be in it again this year, or is it just a one-year?
Unfortunately, this summer we weren't able to because of our schedules. Because I believe they do it by volunteers and
right.
people from Iowa State and whatnot. And their schedules versus our schedules didn't mesh at all throughout the summer.
Yeah.
Now, she does the success reading program through the schools in the year. I don't know if that's related or not.
I don't know either.
Okay. But it's kind of a continuation of the same success program where they have tutors and whatnot. So.
Okay. So, yeah, if the program gets some more volunteers, then maybe you'll...
Correct. Well, and it's all about the timing for us because I work full time.
Right.
So trying to get her into daycare and then having somebody that can take her to work, because these programs, a lot of times they're Tuesdays and Thursdays for an hour in the morning or an hour in the afternoon, and just coordinating getting her there is a little bit difficult. But
I understand. Yeah, there are people like who volunteer just to give rides.
Yes, that's true. There are. You know, there are.
So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And one of the things, Emma had struggled with reading for a while, and she has a twin. So we always had a comparison, and we could always tell at where she was struggling versus what her twin was doing.
Sure.
So this was just an opportunity for her to get away from the rest of us, because I think it's frustrating for her to sit with her twin who gets the reading right away. And she struggles with it a little bit, and to see him go ahead and just start reading a book where she's struggling.
Right.
It was an opportunity for her to get away from that and read on her own with somebody else, and it worked very nice, I think.
Yeah. What was the enrollment process like?
Oh, it was very easy. In fact, I don't even remember what we had to do to enroll. If anything, we just had to send in a postcard that said we're interested, and they called us, and we set up a schedule, And, you know, last year, I don't know. This year, I think they have more people doing it. I could be wrong on that, but I think they do. So they actually have set times, whereas last year, we just called and worked out a schedule that worked with us.
Yeah. And so did you also feel like, you know, she gained a lot?
Yes, she did. She's up to her regular, where she should be at reading right now, and she struggled for quite some time.
Yeah, she'd been behind in the class before then,
yes.
But
yep.
Not
and
anymore.
It's not just, I mean, obviously all goes to reading, but it's also, like she was saying, they do a lot of word searches, and they work, she has some speech issues with the letter R, and they work with that as well. So.
Sure. Do you remember your tutor?
Yeah.
Or
I had two tutors because one moved away. I still remember the whole. They're a great teacher.
What do you remember about them?
Well, they are nice and they help me reading a lot of times when I struggle with some words. They help me sound it out.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've done really well, though.
She's getting there.
Right.
I mean, it helped a lot. We were kind of bummed this summer that our schedules didn't work out. But even just to have the chance to, you know, we've been enforcing the 20-minute reading at least a day. And that also, you can do that. But then this is kind of a fun excuse to go and do another type of reading activity.
Yeah. It seemed like, sorry.
I was going to say, we tried to get her brother into it. They actually, well, last year they volunteered a couple times. We would bring him along and there'd be someone extra sitting around and they would read with him.
Oh, cool.
But he wasn't actually enrolled, so. But I think it's beneficial for everyone, really. Yeah, it's a fun activity for them rather than having, and that was something else because even to get her to read prior to these programs, it was always a struggle because it was hard for her and she didn't want to do it. And then we always ended up butting heads and whatnot.
Right.
So this was kind of an outlet where she could go and actually do the reading that she should have been doing at home a lot of times. Yeah. And it was kind of on even grounds, if you will.
The benefits of the program for Emma seem clear, but how does it work exactly? How does a modest group of volunteers make such a difference for these kids? I had to see a tutor at work.
That looks like a freezer to me. Hmm? A freezer.
No. It shows you what time is it.
This is the sound of a lesson at Raising Readers.
Ding, 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 ding. Why don't you tell me this one? Do you know what it is?
What is it? Freckles.
One, two, three, four. Speed up.
Woohoo!
You get another extra turn.
Another extra turn? Jeepers, creepers.
Here's the easy one for kids.
The tutor's name is Kendria, and she plans to teach for life.
Are you going to do all these?
And as I watch them work, it's obvious why this works so well.
You got one more.
Sure, part of it is the individual attention. She doesn't have 20 other kids to look after, but moreover, she's a friend to him. A good friend who celebrates his victories and is honest but patient when he falls short. Because of this, he wants to get better at everything they do. Just like a kid wants to get better at all the games he plays with his friends. After all, games are always a lot more fun once you get good enough to win. Kendria makes a mistake on her turn so that Ray can correct her and move ahead. I think she also lets him cheat a little bit. But this does not sully his joy upon winning the game. For KHOI, I'm Ben Beloit. Although you'd probably rather hear Emma say it.
You're listening to KHOI 89.1 FM, Soy City Ames.
There you go.
Good job.
Well done.
All right. Thank you, guys.
You're listening to Local Talk, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts, Kay Patrick, and we just listened to a report from Raising Readers, produced by Ben Beloit.
We have Leanne Harder here from the Story County Board of Supervisors. Hi, Leanne. Thanks for coming. And you have a little free library.
We do. The Harder family is the library stewards for the Free Little Library at the Iowa State Extension Building
in
Nevada.
So what's in your library right now?
A lot of tween and preteen books. My daughters did clean out their book collection. There's some children's books. We actually went down last week and checked it, and some more adult literature that I had not seen for a while. Appropriate adult literature.
Mm-hmm. The little houses, do you have to build those yourself?
No, they gave us a pre-built one. All three of my children took an afternoon and painted a side, and then I had a side to paint, and the installation was a fantastic ribbon cutting, and it's been a really fun event.
Mm-hmm. Leanne has agreed to come regularly to update us on Story County, and this is our first installment of this.
It is our first, and I thank you for having me here so I could do this. I want to start by saying when any of the listeners have any questions or anything about Story County for which you'd like more information, just to give me a call, and I can bring it back to you at my next segment. That's 515-382-7247, or you can email me at lharter@storycountyiowa.gov.
We'll post that information on the website.
Perfect.
Too.
Thank you. And we also have social media, of course, Facebook. Search for us by Story County, Iowa. And then our Twitter is just Story County, Iowa, and our website as well. So lots of ways to get in touch with us. But we have some fun things upcoming. We have an open house at Story County Conservation for our Cornerstone to Capstone project. That's a project I was here a month or so ago talking about. It's a year-long project to develop a comprehensive plan for Story County. That meeting will be on Tuesday, August 11th, so tomorrow night, from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at McFarland Park, so northeast of Ames. It's a community input meeting specifically geared towards the natural resources component of the long-range plan. Then, following up on that, we have a citizens task force for that project. They will meet this Thursday at 5:30, at the public meeting room at the Story County Administration Building in Nevada. Those meetings are open to the public.
And these are really extraordinary opportunities to have an impact on the future of the county. They're really doing long-range planning.
Exactly.
And are asking for the citizens of Story County to tell them what they want. Your questions are good and easy to answer, and really encourage you to go to a meeting like that and have a say about the future.
The input meeting tomorrow night will be the last one in January. That will be a physical meeting. Our website is c2cplan.com. There's information out there regarding the latest updates to the plan, the drafts that are being posted. All the public meeting presentations are online. The survey you mentioned has closed. We'll be providing some updates on that and some preliminary results. I'll have those next time I come.
That'd be great.
But what I think is really exciting, a demographic we weren't reaching with that more lengthy survey, was our 12 to 20-year-olds. So we tailored a specific survey for that age group, and that is now online as well on the C2Cplan.com. It's been sent to all the local school districts, various recreation parks and recreation departments, really to get the word out, and we're having great feedback on that. I mean, we're looking at a plan for 20 years in the future. We want to hear from them. They're mm-hmm. going to be running the show in 20 years.
Right.
Or near to.
Right.
So it's a great demographic that we're reaching out to. Just some quick other meetings. Board of Supervisors, of course, meet every Tuesday at 10 o'clock a.m. in Nevada, the public meeting room. Their agendas are always posted the Friday beforehand online. And you can actually go to Story County's website, sign up for Notify Me, and receive notices of those upcoming meetings. So you can see if there's something you might be interested in following. And then Brett McLean with the Story County Veterans Affairs did ask me to share that there's a military tribute concert honoring Iowa's veterans at the Iowa State Fair, which kicks off Thursday on the Ann and Bill Riley stage on August 17th at 5 p.m. So not a Story County event, but definitely an event that we mm-hmm. hope people do attend. We have some more exciting news coming up in our next issue of Our Story. That's our quarterly newsletter we send out. That'll be online and on social media the week of August 24th. And then last but not least, we do have some new elections equipment that will be the county auditor has purchased. I'm very pleased to be bringing forth to the public to use in the upcoming school election on September 8th. And if anyone is interested in seeing how that new election equipment works, the auditor, Lucy Martin, has set up a public test of the election equipment beginning Monday, August 24th at 9 a.m. Again, that's in Nevada in the public meeting room. And that's at what we call the old courthouse mm-hmm, in Nevada.
Right.
So lots of exciting things going on.
Thank you, Leanne, and come back again soon with an update, and we'll keep going.
We'll do.
Really
thank you.
Really appreciate you coming.
Thank you for having me.
Let's check into the downtown Ames. Ron Carlson spoke with Cindy Hicks from the Main Street Cultural District.
We're here today at KHOI Studios with Cindy Hicks, Executive Director of the Main Street Cultural District. Good morning, Cindy.
Thank you for coming to talk to me this morning.
I have a reason for being here, and do you know what that is?
Well, I think you want to talk about all of the upcoming events in downtown Ames.
And in particular, I want to talk about Foodies and Brew.
Well, Foodies and Brew comes up this Friday on August the 14th. It's the second annual Foodies and Brew. You can expect some really fabulous locally made food from all of the best restaurants in Ames, and that will be paired with locally brewed beers from 8 different breweries. They're Iowa breweries. 3 of them are actually Ames breweries, and it'll be a good time. Live music. Fun right down on Douglas in front of the KHOI studios.
Well, I should be able to find it, as will our listeners. You say this is the second annual Foodies and Brew. Tell me about the first one.
Well, that took place last year. They put it together. The idea behind it was to showcase some of our wonderful local options when it comes to dining in Ames. We have some really fine establishments for eating here, and we thought it would be nice to just have a way to showcase those where you could just go down, have a little fun on Main Street, listen to some live music, and just sample what the local eateries had to offer. Of course, in Ames, it's just natural to pair that with a locally made beer. We have 3 breweries in Ames, and so you put those 2 things together and you have a great event.
Last year's event performed to expectation?
It actually was a great event. We had hundreds of people come down and take part in it. Basically, what you do is you come down, you buy a ticket, or you can buy a ticket online at amesdowntown.org. You go to each tent, and each restaurant will give you a pretty good sample of their food. You won't leave hungry, and in fact, you may not have room for all of it, but you'll get a pretty good sample from each restaurant. And then you will get to sample all of the beers. I believe there are going to be 20 different beers from the 8 different breweries. You'll get a commemorative glass to go along with that. Then at 8:30, the Burnin' Sensations will take the stage and the beer tent will open. And so you can stick around after you have a good meal and enjoy some live music.
That sounds like a great time. Bigger and better this year.
Absolutely bigger and better. Last year's event actually had a little damper on it, if you recall. Mother Nature didn't cooperate, and it rained, and we had to move the live entertainment inside at the last minute. But everybody last year said what a great time they had, and we had every single restaurant sign up to do it again. We've had great interest from the community and in this event, so I think it's going to be even better than it was last year.
I have every confidence. What else is coming up? This isn't the only event of the summer, is it?
Well, coming up on August the 28th, we have our second Ames Main Street Bike Night. If you happen to remember from June, we had the first one back then, and that was kind of a trial run. We had heard that these kind of events were very popular in other towns. People who ride motorcycles like a place to ride to, and they like to, you know, gather and show off their bikes and talk to other people with similar interests. And so the event in June way exceeded our expectations, and it was a really fun event. So we're going to do it again on August the 28th. The main event area will be again on Douglas Street between 5th and Main, but then there will be motorcycle only parking in the 200, 300, and 400 blocks of Main. Last time it was just a 200 block, and we realized that we needed a whole lot more. And Main Street will still be open, so if you like to just look at motorcycles, you can drive up Main Street and gaze at them. You know, you can stop in. We'll have live music once again. We will have a beer tent. We have some great downtown sponsors for this event that are downtown businesses, so you can go and check those out. We will have a shop hop where there will be incentive for the different participants to go into the different stores downtown. So I think good food, I forgot to mention that, pizza and barbecue and burgers and quesadillas. And so that'll be a fun event coming up on August the 28th. Then on September 3rd, we have the annual Music Walk. Music Walk, of course, takes place every summer downtown, and this year is no different, although I think it'll be bigger and better this year. Basically, what happens is the different downtown businesses hosts musicians, all kinds of musicians. I mean, from bongos to banjos to fiddles, classic rock bands, country bands, flutes, you name it. You can hear it downtown on September the 3rd. So it starts at 5 o'clock in the evening. Come down, find yourself a parking place, and just walk from business to business and listen to the different genres of music. At 6:30, once again, we'll have the Kids Kazoo Choir at Tom Evans Park. So if you're interested in that, look for a volunteer with a bag of kazoos, and then we'll have a lady who's going to give kazoo lessons to kids at 6:30, and shortly after that, the kazoo choir will commence. So that will go on until 8 o'clock. Then, of course, on September 19th, our annual Oktoberfest, we're going to turn downtown Ames into a little corner of Germany. We'll have Guten Tag games. We'll have 20 different types of beer you can taste, commemorative glasses, German food, live music. So put your polka shoes on and head downtown.
Will there be polka?
There will be polka. Lots of polka. You can't have a German party with no polka.
I accept that. Back to the bike night, you mentioned there would be live music there. Will that be polka as well?
That will not be polka. That will be classic rock. The name of the band is Viva Shea. You can check out all the information you need to know about Bike Night on the Ames Bike Night Facebook page. We try to update that on a regular basis with what we have going on with that event, so check it out.
Thank you, Cindy Hicks.
Thank you for coming to talk to me this morning. It's been a pleasure.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we were listening to Ron Carson speaking with Cindy Hicks from the Main Street Cultural District about upcoming events in downtown Ames.
It's your birthday. I'll celebrate it to you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and a really big event for KHOI is our third anniversary, a really important milestone for us. We went on the air in August 2012, and we will be celebrating on the 23rd of August. As part of the celebration, we will be having a special guest coming from Iowa City to help us celebrate. Iowa's own former FCC Commissioner and Free Speech Crusader, Nicholas Johnson, will be coming to Ames in honor of our anniversary, and he'll be speaking at 3:30 on the origins and future of radio at the First United Methodist Church. Again, that's on Sunday, August 23rd, with a reception afterwards at Bar La Tosca. Both events will be free of charge, and we appreciate donations, but we do invite you as our guests, and we really hope you'll come. We wanted to introduce you to Mr. Johnson, so we asked him to join us on the phone from Iowa City today, and he kindly agreed to join us. Thank you, Dr. Johnson, and are you with us?
I am indeed, and happy birthday to you all.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for coming to Ames to help us celebrate. Now, we wanted to take a few minutes just to introduce you to folks here in Ames. For those people that don't know you, you were a FCC commissioner from 1966 until 1973, then worked later on with the Carter administration. Could you, for starters, just give us a little bit of an explanation of exactly what an FCC commissioner does?
Well, judging by some of my colleagues, as Donald Trump might say, as little as possible. But I took it a little differently. Let me draw an analogy to the federal court system. The Federal Communications Commission is what's called an independent regulatory commission. That is to say, it's not a part of the executive branch of the government.
Right.
The president appoints the commissioners, and the Senate confirms them just as if they were executive branch appointees. But while they are usually appointed for a term, and during that term they cannot be removed. As a result of my positions, Richard Nixon sought to have me impeached, and I discovered that there were no procedures for impeaching FCC commissioners, and then, as you may recall, subsequently discovered that there were procedures for impeaching presidents.
Why did Richard Nixon want to impeach you?
I was questioning some of the things that the administration was doing, such as charging the problems of drug addiction to the music of the time. And I wrote a big full-page piece in the New York Times reciting some of the lyrics. He had put together a multimedia, or rather he had the U.S. Army put together for him a multimedia show regarding some of these lyrics, and so I questioned how war, what's it good for, absolutely nothing, as a lyric should be criminally punished for somehow encouraging drug addiction and so forth.
But interesting.
I challenged other things. I found in the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich an explanation of Hitler's approach to political rallies and so forth, and then published that in parallel columns with what the Nixon administration was doing at public rallies, and noted that there seemed to be they almost seemed to have plagiarized from the man. And, well, needless to say, things like that, and I was throwing something at them probably a couple times a month, and ultimately it kind of gets under their skin, you can imagine.
Is this how you ended up on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine?
I suspect it had something to do with it. After I was on the cover, and after my effort at running a Democratic primary for Congress from Iowa, Jan Winter asked me if I wanted to write for the publication, but I didn't take him up on that. But no, there was a, they did a full length, it was not just the cover, there was actually some words inside in which they were talking about what I was doing on the FCC generally. He had a broader vision for the publication than merely the music biz.
Tell us a little bit about Communications Watch.
Oh, yeah. I've also, in addition to being a media critic, I've also worked in the media. I hosted a show that was carried by PBS stations back in the sort of early to mid-80s called New Tech Times, which is usual for me. It was about 20 years ahead of its time. I think it would have done much better in the 90s than it did in the early 80s. And I was doing regular commentaries on National Public Radio. I covered Ragbrave for NPR in the early days. While I was doing that and a national public lecturing business through the Lee Lecture Bureau in New York, I was also writing a nationally syndicated column for which I gave the title Communications Watch.
Wow. And then you were also working with Jimmy Carter as well as an advisor, is that correct?
Well, that was the official title, and it was enough that it produced one more of those enormous plaques with the president's signature on it certifying that you've been appointed to this office. The title was presidential advisor, but I actually did work with him in other contexts than the one to which I was appointed to. What I was appointed to was presidential advisors to put on the White House Conference on Libraries and Information Sciences in 1979, and we ended up using a early version of portable personal communications, a Texas Instrument device that had acoustic cups on it and a thermal printer and a solid memory and a keyboard. It was really quite an extraordinary thing. It was built to mil spec and I think used by the military. And with that, as we traveled, because we found out that not only were there no dates we could all get together in Washington to meet these advisors, there's a half dozen or dozen of us, I don't remember. Not only did we have difficulty finding a date that we all had free, but it also was going to take a big chunk of our budget to pay our travel expenses. So we just schlepped these TI-765s, I think they were, around, and were able to communicate from airports and homes and hotels and wherever we were because we were all traveling folk, and ended up using what there was of the internet at that time. I think we probably called it BitNet. Maybe it was still DARPANET or something, I don't know. But anyhow, so we were exchanging emails, setting up committees and getting delegates and doing all that, and ended up putting together the largest White House conference in history in the shortest time frame in history. And that was kind of the beginning of a lot of the information technology that we now take for granted, then on much larger equipment than what we're able to use to do the same thing today. But that was a very interesting experience. But that did not involve a lot of personal contact with Jimmy Carter. But I've been involved in other projects that involved the Carter Center, at which he also participated and worked a number of countries around the world trying to lend them a hand on dealing with their own media policy issues.
We're speaking with Dr. Nicholas Johnson. Mr. Johnson's in Iowa City, where you now teach law. Is that correct, Mr. Johnson?
Well, yes, except that when I turned 65, I thought it was too early to retire. When I turned 80 last fall, I decided maybe it was better to walk out of the classroom than to be carried out in a box. And so I technically retired, although I'm about to go over there to my office when we're through here. The law school is only about 3 blocks from the house. I have an office over there and access to a secretary and all the stuff I did before. And students still stop by the office, but I don't go to a classroom to misinform them anymore.
We're really excited that you're coming here. Thank you so much. We're really looking forward to having you come to Ames.
Well, I'm looking forward to your third birthday party. I think that's quite exciting. I've always been a big promoter of the kind of radio you represent. And
thank you so much. And Mr. Johnson will be speaking on the 23rd at 3:30 at First United Methodist Church. And we really look forward to seeing you then, Mr. Johnson. Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday to you. How old are you? How old are you? Happy birthday, happy birthday, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. You look like a monkey and you smell like one. Ha ha!
And we're listening to Local Talk on KHOI, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. And we hope that you'll join us on the 23rd at the First United Methodist Church to hear Mr. Johnson speak on the future of radio, where he thinks media is going in general and who should be in charge of it. So we'll look forward to that. And afterwards, there'll be a reception at Bar La Tosca from 4:30 to 6:30 and a birthday party. So please join us in that during that time.
This has been Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we look at people, events, and stories of Central Iowa. Thank you, Leon Harter of Story County Board of Supervisors, and we'll be seeing you again soon. We also thank Nicholas Johnson, lawyer, former Commissioner of Federal Communications Commission, and author of How to Take Back Your Television Set and other works. And thank you, thanks to him, for joining us today. Dr. Johnson will be coming to Ames on Sunday, August the 23rd, to speak at the First United Methodist Church here in Ames at 3:30. He'll be here in honor of KHOI's third birthday. There'll be a party and reception after the talk at Bar La Tosca at 4:30, and you are invited.
We also heard today a report by Ben Beloit about Raising Readers, featuring Diane Schmidt, member and secretary, board of directors of Raising Readers in Story County, and a supervisor of the National Assessment of Educational Progress, and Kendria, who is a tutor at Raising Readers. Thank you, Ron Carson, who interviewed Cindy Hicks from Main Street Cultural District, and Leanne was here from the Story County Board of Supervisors. Thanks for joining us, Leanne. Local Talk is aired today at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. You can also listen online to the show later on the homepage of our website at khoifm.org. You'll also find links there to the information that was given out today, how to reach Leanne, Story County, and other links. And remember that KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org as well. So the website's a great resource. And if you enjoyed the show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Your participation as an audience who make KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.